Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here, and joining me this evening, I've got the wonderful trio of Jaffo, Tom Gibson and Gully. We've got Gully on a reaction show, ladies and gents. It's like having royalty. I can't remember last time I did a podcast with you.
It's been a while. I'd specifically packed off the missus and the little and just so I could be on tonight. So they've gone to her mum's. Just so I can get stuck into Wolves versus Burnley.
Perfect. That seems completely justified in my opinion. Bizarre, because the last time me and you actually saw each other was at Bluey's Big Bang.
Yeah, of course. Very much on parenting duty, wasn't it? At that on that morning. We'll do a review. We should do a review show on that, shouldn't we? Really.
I you know what? It was great play. I mean, bizarre. It was frustrating. Quite a long delay, which of all audiences to have a delay, like honestly, I'd rather be, you know, Wolves versus West Brom and the kickoff get delayed 15 minutes than having an announcement to, there's going to be delay for a bunch of 1 to 5 year olds. But I feel
it helps us out because we took the piss park in the car, but there you go. Plenty of fun was had.
I was going to say, I nearly shed a tear at the end as well. I'm not going to lie. I did get emotional, but as we all do when you watch Bluey, I feel like I'm like just veering away from talking about football at this point, which, that's why we're all here, isn't it? Of course, we're going to talk about Wolves' draw against Burnley. We're going to talk about O'Neill's post-match comments, and we'll also hopefully touch on to a bit about the West Ham match as well. Big thanks to everyone who's joining us live on YouTube. Anyone who's watching back or listening via pods, make sure, of course, you like, share and subscribe. It really helps us grow what we're doing at the Fancast, of course. Let's get right into it, fellas, because it was a TNT week, of which they had 8 games they wanted to show, and Wolves wasn't one of them. Not bitter, but I can see on paper why it didn't get picked. I do get it, but at the same time, it is a little bit annoying that it didn't get shared in the UK.
I think the last one was on telly. It might have been a Prime Video week. I think
it might have been.
And if they didn't have it on, even in the very few opportunities they get to broadcast games, I don't think they would have been too bothered last time round, because it was another dreary affair. And last night wasn't much better, worse, indifferent. Just a bad team we don't like to play against, really. It's just one of those clubs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll talk about the game yesterday, of course, but it did feel like it got to a certain point around like the 80th minute where both teams didn't want to lose and were kind of fairly okay with the draw. But I think the interesting thing for me was the starting lineup and the formation change, really, because when it was announced, there's lots of umming and ahhings in terms of how we were going to set up. On the Wolves official lineup graphic, it kind of looked more like a 5 at the back, with Doty playing right centre half, and Gully, I know you sort of were quite keen to almost see Gully on Gully. I mean, yeah, you probably want to see yourself, but keen to see Docking be, I guess, the right side of centre half instead of Santi Bueno.
Yeah, the squad's that small. I might be in with a shout, to be fair, but not quite. Yeah, I think Matt Doherty is a bit of a conundrum for us at the moment. He's obviously one of the more experienced players within the squad, but he just seems incapable of really having any impact, especially when we have the ball. So with that in mind, I'd have preferred... The way the system ended up shaping up was we basically reversed it from what we normally do, which is having Totti as that kind of third centre-half who's able to kind of push the wing back on the left side a little bit higher and almost sit as a left back at times. And Semedo was that guy really this time around. Totti and Kilman tended to play as kind of more orthodox centre backs. And I would have preferred to see Doherty deeper and Semedo higher because I think Semedo's just a better player on the ball. And Doherty is probably one of the best defenders we have at dealing with crosses to the back post as well. And as it transpired, that could have been quite a useful thing to have with him a bit more narrow. It was a team that when you first saw it, you thought, okay, well, there's lots of different options that you've got. You know, it could show up in a number of ways. I don't think it showed up in the best way we could have played it within the 11 that were actually out on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Jafo, when you... The thing that sort of stuck out to me was the fact that however you kind of slice it, we effectively played four full-backs / wing-backs. And although it gave us, in theory, a lot of natural width, do you think it had potential to kind of halt us offensively as well? Because, you know, however great Aitnori wasn't, look, he didn't play as left winger necessarily yesterday. He was here, there and everywhere. Was it always going to be a bit difficult for us to kind of really push him on the front foot and be aggressive with that many, I guess, slightly more defensive players?
Yeah, I think when you, even with any sort of flexibility in players and having the ability to play in multiple positions and the way that Aitnori and Doherty can play further forward up the pitch, I think as O'Neill said in the press conference after the game, was that at the end of the day, he's played exceptionally well, Aitnori, this season, but it's at the end of the day, he's a left back. And I think we see that when we have these players playing further up the field. Granted, they have great, they get in fantastic positions to try and score goals, but at the end of the day, you do expect them to get the outcome that they had last night, where, you know, they're not finishing chances because at the end of the day, they're defenders, they're not forwards. So invariably, that's not the job they're paid to do. And it's frustrating because it is where we are, and no one can predict the position that we're in terms of where the injuries are and where the squad is. To have the three main forwards, I mean, Cunha's just come back, but before that game, to have the three main forwards out with the similar injuries, it's unprecedented. And it's unlucky to be where we are. And it's frustrating, but the players are adapting in a way to help the situation. And to be fair, they didn't look too far off it last night in terms of what O'Neill wanted from them. And so we did create chances. But it's just trying to adapt up a short term because of obviously the injury situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think my sort of thing with fullbacks is it's the wide equivalent of when people say, oh, we're playing a false nine. It's like, no, you're just playing a midfielder up front. And there is almost like that natural, Doherty, as far as I'm aware, has never played necessarily that far forward. He might have done it a couple of times for Ireland, maybe he's not naturally that as progressive. And I think you're right that this team is showing a level of adaptability that frankly they've not had to do for a long period of time. I mean, the other kind of thing that I was interested in sort of highlighting, Tom, was in terms of sort of the movements and rotation of the squad, is Santi Bueno getting dropped to kind of accommodate, I guess, some of those other players to make it a bit more of a balanced starting lineup. Do you think that was a bit unfair, or do you think it was kind of his almost time to drop out the side?
I don't think really O'Neill had a choice. When I first saw the team, I did think it was harsh on Bueno. Obviously, because he named four fullbacks, like me and my mate was trying to work out what is he actually playing? Is he going to play Doc further back or further up front? But I don't think he has much choice with the squad that we've got. And I think because we played the game on the Saturday as well, and you've only got a couple of days to prepare for this game, I think it was he just rotated with what he could, really. So, and I think everyone just rotates for game time as well. So I'd say it was fair, because I think everyone deserves game time to play and prove themselves. So I'd say it was fair, yeah.
All right. I mean, let's get into the game itself, because obviously Burnley had a good game at the weekend against Chelsea, and I was really curious to sort of see how we'd match up against them. And for me, it felt like Wolves did struggle to find their feet in the first sort of opening stages of it. I know they... I sort of think if we were against a better team, it would have been a slightly different story. Because we seemed to kind of struggle to get a foothold in the game early on. I don't know whether that was tactics personal or just Burnley quietly sort of stringing a couple of decent performances together recently.
I think if you remember the game at Molineux, they out of possession, they were actually pretty good. They stopped us playing out, which, I mean, I think Kunyun Hwang started that game definitely. And I think Neto was around in that one. But when you have the inability to hold the ball up front that we do, it obviously gives the opposition a bit of a boost in terms of they can press a bit higher onto us. And they're essentially going man for man, in a very kind of strict way. So then when we try to play out from the back, because we haven't got a long pass on necessarily to actually hit a front man who's going to hold it up for us, then we got caught out a couple of times. And that's where we found ourselves giving up the ball far too easily, I think. For me, I think in those kind of scenarios, if Chiwomi's up there, just let him run channels. You know, even if he doesn't hold the ball up, it's still turning the defence. It's still not causing us our own problems. Obviously, you know, we've got players in the team who want to get the ball into feet, who want to play out of difficult situations and things like that. But we've kind of, you know, just created a risk that we didn't need to. And in this current team, they're not going to score more than probably one or two a game. So you need to try and keep it a clean sheet as long as possible in the game and kind of let ourselves down a little bit on that front.
Yeah, I mean, the goal itself, I mean, I was going to say with Chiwomi, there was a couple of occasions where I remember him winning a corner relatively early on from just doing doing your doggies, as it were. And it felt like we just needed to kind of sometimes do a little bit more of that and, you know, really try and stretch for play, because Burnley, you know, for all their faults, they aren't a team who just sort of, I guess, they aren't the Sean Dyche Burnley. They do come out and try and play, and they do leave those gaps at the back sometimes and really try and push on. And Chiwomi's, unlike Fraser, does offer that threat in behind. And, I don't know, considering we had an international break and he played against Villa, should we? Am I expecting too much to think that we should have, you know, if we're adapting to a certain level, look who we're playing up front, you know, try and support him in that way. But I guess when you look at the players behind him in terms of Sarabia's not someone who is necessarily that mobile to really support him, and you're asking Doherty to run hard yards and whoever. I know it was frustrating to see we couldn't, you know, really stretch him a little bit more in terms of that front line.
I think it's a weird one with Chiwomi. I mean, he's obviously there because the squad we've got, the squad size we've got, but he's, what, 18, 19? That's the same age as me, and he's in the Wolves' first team. Like, that's a lot of pressure. So I think no matter what, it's going to be hard for him. But I think, look at the service he's getting as well. I thought he made some really good runs last night, some really intelligent runs, and just didn't get the passes. But I think that'll come with time, and I think a lot of it is being too eager. You don't want to get caught offside and lose possession, especially like Gully said earlier, you need to keep a clean sheet as long as you can when we're short of attackers. But I think it comes with time. But I think what O'Neill said in the past as well, like, these players aren't expected to be in the squad. Like, they, if you would have asked them before, they would have been expected to still be in the academy. So for them to come in, you know, Chiwome, Fraser, etc., Ty Barnett, these type of players, I think they're handling themselves pretty well, to be fair.
I mean, I think with Chiwome, I think a lot of the rhetoric online, in particular, and I tend to agree, it did feel like people weren't passing to him or didn't have that trust in him, and felt we had the same with Fraser a couple of weeks back as well. I know he put in a poor show against Coventry, Nathan Fraser, but it almost felt like, not, I wouldn't say deliberate, but there's a couple of times where Sarabia could and should have played him a bit better. And ultimately, you need your senior players, you need your experienced players like Sarabia and like Lamina to step up in those occasions. And you know, it's so much to expect on someone so young to be able to deliver, and sort of just hope, oh, he's going to have a Rooney moment. Do you know what I mean? It's like, go, oh, we're just going to bring off an, you know, 18-year-old academy player, and it's going to be absolute Roy of Rovers stuff. And yet again, and I don't know quite whether, say, it's system or whatever, but, you know, someone like Sarabia didn't quite step up enough to help out his fellow forward.
I think when it comes to Sarabia, I think there was opportunities when the ball did, he tried to play the ball. But with a lot of the things that he tried, it was kind of like unforced errors. When he tried to play the ball through, it had hit the Burnley defender, or the pass would be too short, or it had run on too long. So they're trying to link up, but it's difficult, like you said, when you've got an 18, 19-year-old who hasn't really been involved in the first team squad, to come in to try and make connections and to try and play with players who, you know, who've been playing with Cunha, been playing with Huang, Pedro Neto, who play the game in a very different way to the way that he was trying to run channels last night, because it's not really the way that they play the game. To try and expect something like that from an 18, 19-year-old to come into the Premier League and to adapt and to do things, it's difficult. Like you said, it's very, very difficult. And it needs help from the players around him. And I think it'll come, but it's very difficult to expect results instantaneously.
There's one moment where I think Sarabia nearly played him in. And if it doesn't get cut out, he's one-on-one with the keeper, which I think Sarabia played it more with hope than expectation that he's going to find him a little bit. I said in the group earlier that Sarabia looks like he's playing, almost like he's feeling sorry for himself, in terms of, you know, this is what I've got to work with at the moment, you know, woe is me kind of stuff, when he's a senior player and you want him to stand up and be counted a little bit. Fair enough, he obviously pulled out the assist for the goal. But on the flip side of that, there was another one where Chiwomi, he ended up receiving the ball, was one-on-one with the defender, he's committed. And when you want your centre-forward to look like, you know, he's aggressive, he's got conviction about his game, he just had a really unsure touch and he's lost the ball. And I think as an 18-year-old, you know, let's be honest, there's no pressure on you to go out and do anything. I don't think anyone's expecting you to set the world alight. But in those little moments, you need to give confidence to the fans and confidence to the players around you that, you know what, I'm worth a shot here. And that's where I think he let himself down a little bit. And that's where, you know, people might take a second thought as to whether they're actually going to play the ball to you. It happens everywhere, you know. It happens at Sunday League, that kind of stuff. If you look around and you're not sure of the guy, you know, in front of you is going to deliver on, you know, when you pass the ball to them, you are going to be a little bit more circumspect about what you're doing. So, to be fair to Sarabia, there are times, you know, that I expect a little bit more from Chiwome. I mean, not a lot, just a little bit. But at the same time, I think Sarabia needs to be a little bit more of a leader of that attack, because it's Ryan Aitnuri at the moment, right? And he's 22 years old.
Yeah. And that was a standout thing yesterday, was, you know, it was the Aitnuri show in terms of picking up that slack. And I get it to a degree from Sarabia, as you say, that his only option to play the forward pass is to an 18-year-old who's played a handful of games, and if he's not 100% there, it doesn't matter if you're playing 19th in the league. They are still a Premier League outfit and they are still a tough competitor heading into the business end of the season. So he is going to probably second guess and do things like that. And you say it happens in all sports in terms of that, oh, maybe I don't, you know, I won't give the ball to you as much. But you say, when you could see that those senior players weren't quite trusting him, and it's a two-way street and you go round in a circle, because obviously Chiromo is only going to sort of be more withdrawn the less he gets the ball, and those players are less likely to pass to him because he's looking that little less unsure, a little less confident, aggressive, whatever you pick your adjective. And then it's going to, you know, it's going to keep happening and happening. So I know, hopefully Kuna potentially starts Saturday and we can hopefully give Chiromo more minutes off the bench and things like that, because I do think there is a good, very good player there. And I think some of the stuff online sort of said, oh no, he's just not very good, feels so bloody reductive for someone who is clearly quite talented playing at, you know, England youth level. Just, he has been thrown in the absolute deep end. And I say it's really frustrating. And like, if you go off like literally the stats off it, which is why I can't pull them up on the screen, you know, oh, he had one shot, he had 9 passes, 21 touches in 75 minutes. You go, oh, well, clearly he's done fuck all this game. But it doesn't kind of tell a wider picture of what he was having to do as effectively a lone striker yesterday. I think it's a real shame. It's not trying to be a happy clapper or anything, because there's certainly parts of his game he needs to develop and improve on if he wants to be a Premier League player. But it definitely didn't help us yesterday. Saying that though, it wasn't his fault we conceded the goal. And as it happens with a lot of goals, but this one I think was quite an interesting one in terms of how we ended up conceding it, in terms of who was at fault or who was most accountable for the goal. Because when it kind of gets looped over, you almost see that Wolves are very much lined up expecting somebody to mark up Larsson. And I guess my first thing for you, Jaffo, is it a Semedo issue? Is it a Doherty issue? Is it a Kilman one, so to speak, in terms of being able to, you know, push everyone across one, really?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I seen it as a mix between Semedo and Kilman. I still think it probably is. Looking at that still there, I know it still can be misconstrued, but Semedo there, he's in the wrong position. He's behind the attacker that he's next to. I think maybe what you said, Gully, yesterday in the chat, where he doesn't know that he's there. He's got to be scanning. He's got to look to see what's behind him and try and adapt. But this is all like micro seconds and stuff that happens so quickly. And I think maybe it's down to us changing the system slightly. And like you say, we're playing that sort of like back four in when we're in possession and shuffling, but it being Semedo coming inside as a defender hasn't really worked. And I think where you said Doherty probably would have worked better there, because he's a stronger defender on the back post than Semedo is, maybe we'd have worked the shape. But I think you can maybe look at the way that we lined up. But I think between them two, they should be marking that a lot better. Kilman, you look at the still there, he's got nothing. He's not marking cutting out a passing lane there, and he's certainly not marking anybody. So he's either got to go man for man, or he's got to mark the space, and there he's not cutting any passing line out.
I think sometimes football can get overanalyzed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gary O'Neill talks a lot about, you know, what a game looks like, and I think the players are obviously drilled to the nth degree on what to expect from other teams. I don't know if they expected, you know, Darrow O'Shea to play a deep ball to the back post from that position. And it from the setup that we've got there, Doherty not coming round to sweep behind tells me that maybe he doesn't feel like he needs to. And I mean, it just comes down to intuition, right? Where you sense the danger is. So maybe he needs to be a little bit more communicative with Semedo and make sure he's aware of it. Semedo, I think, simply has no idea that Brun Larsen's there. But at the same time, yeah, maybe they just weren't expecting Burnley to play in that way. They're not the kind of team that just, you know, sets deep crosses into the box, right? So Burnley have sensed an opportunity. They've taken it. It's good quality from O'Shea and then obviously Brun Larsen, but it felt so, so soft at the point at which this was conceded in the game. When we'd ridden out a little bit of a storm, I think, you know, they'd play a little bit around the penalty area and had a little bit of joy, but they hadn't really created anything clear-cut. So to then concede in that way, having also had a couple of decent openings ourselves, and to obviously, like I say, to go one behind with this team, with this attacking setup, is just, you know, it feels like a killer blow at the moment.
I think you've kind of got to look, like, as Gully mentioned there, you've got to have some communication there. Like, for example, but with Kilman, as Chifo said, he's not really marking any passing lane enough, and he's just there pretty much. But, you know, that's where Doc should be, you know, saying to Semedo, you know, like, and Semedo should be scanning anyway, but if he hasn't looked, and if Doc knows he's not going to get back, then you'd tell the information to your peers. And obviously, you know, in that situation, I know it looks obviously worse on a still image, but if Kilman's to tell Semedo, then maybe that goal gets chalked out. But I think that's where we miss players like Dawson, who do regularly scan and tell people where to go, and that bit of experience. And I thought it was still a quality goal, the way he took it. But as we've said, I think it's a really soft goal to give away with just how free he was in the box.
Yeah. I was going to say, when I look at it, and you can just about see it on the ceiling, I point to my screen, like, you know, you can always see where my finger is. But in the top left-hand corner, you can see a Burnley player who I suspect was supposed to be Doherty's man. And it is that... I think it is just that mixture of the mixing up between a back four and a back five in and out of possession, and it being slightly different players who have those responsibilities. Whether it's, you say, whether it's Kilman as the organizer, whether it's Semedo as the one who is switching between, you know, set right side centre half and right back, and whether he is going to be that one to do it, or even Doherty. And you're right. It is potentially a case of, oh, Burnley, it's not necessarily something they do in terms of sort of sticking it in the mixer and sort of finding those cute bits of space. But at the same time, it is such a glaring opening. You do wonder, well, what sort of level of analysis? And you'd almost expect it more to happen on the other side when, you know, Toti Gomez sometimes fills that role and there might be a gap there. So,
but I think on that, though, it's more intuitive on the left side because that's the way we've set our shape up.
Yeah.
You know, Totti's used to doing that. It's kind of hybrid position because he's been doing it all season. And he, for what it's worth, he had a really good game, I thought, yesterday. And maybe that's where Semedo and Doherty have kind of... they've not quite got their bearings in terms of where they need to be in this scenario. It's just a frustrating one because you can see straight away what's gone wrong.
I mean, the other side of the coin, but Burnley, that's a fantastic bit of initiative. You know, whether it's something that they've had half an idea on the training ground or it's inventive a moment, solid finish, Sarr's doing nothing about it, who, you know, we talk about having good games. Jose Sarr again. When we've needed players to stand up and be counted, he stood up and was counted yesterday for me. And it might not have been a lot. As Mike Everson says in the comments, it's all because Doc needs to be played up front. We are waiting for MD9. We really are. But yeah, it's one of them. You're right. I think you are right, Khalid. It's easy to overanalyze. I think it is just a slight breakdown in communication. We can should do it better. But let's talk about Ait Nouri, because yet again, he was the star of the show. Whether he was picking up the ball on the left side, whether he was drifting in the middle at one point, he's over on the right side. He is just a wonderful footballer to watch at the moment. And I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah, his development's been just incredible, really. I mean, you look at the work that they've done with him on the training ground to try and improve not only the attacking side of his game, but also the defensive, along with that, the conditioning. I mean, you look compared to where he was sort of under Lopetegui and previously under Lars, and he wasn't finishing games, or he couldn't play two or three games in a week. And now he's done two games in this week, you know, multiple times. He's played multiple times a week, finished games. You know, he looks conditioned to be a fantastic footballer, and the level that he's playing at now is so much higher than when he came into the club. And to see somebody to lift their footballing ability and to put it on the pitch consistently is fantastic. It's something that should really be proud of as a coaching team, because it shows that the work they're doing is paying off. And the guy is easily sort of in the some of the best fullbacks in the league at the moment. You know, he's going to have clubs looking at him from all over Europe when we come to the summer, because having fullbacks who can attack but also play in different areas. And also, if he continues to develop, he could play sort of further forward into midfield. Having players like that don't come around very often, and you know, and they command good money. So it's a fantastic position for us to be in the club as a club, but also fantastic that the coaching staff have been able to develop Aitner into this better player and to get the results, you know, that they're getting with him. It's hands down incredible work.
Yeah,
I say it's going.
The thing that got me about this was talking about, you know, being able to play out and stuff. The one player we could play into feet with was Aitnuri, and he's built like a rake. You know, he'd have a man really tight to his back, and he'd still be, you know, fending him off, receiving the ball, turning. Like before the free kick that he won, in inverted commas, for the goal, he took on two or three men from receiving the ball in that kind of left channel, turned, beat a couple of players, and then he's bearing down on the penalty area. And you think, honestly, because he can play outside and inside, he is primed for one of those Man City, Arsenal teams that play with that inverted fullback. You know, sits deep in midfield, can get out of pressing situations. You know, can then go and defend his wide areas as well. I thought, look at someone like Zinchenko, who's tended to play, you know, he's played in title-winning teams in that specific role, and he looks very distinctly average out of possession in that. I think Aitnuri would be an absolute massive upgrade on him for someone like Arsenal. Not tempting fate on him getting a move, but he's that good at the moment, and I can see him getting a lot of interest in the summer.
I think one thing with him as well is that what I've noticed is when he's got the ball, I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of like calm when he's got the ball, because you know he's not going to lose it.
Wasn't always the case though, was it? I think.
Yeah, exactly. That, like Jeffo said, that shows from the coaching and things like that. And I mean, especially his fitness as well, because obviously in the past, obviously Lopetegui, you know, didn't get along with him. I'm pretty sure Lars wasn't the best with him. So I always thought, was it a fitness issue or an attitude issue? But it's obviously, you know, what O'Neill's got under him and his coaching staff, they've obviously cracked it. So, yeah, we're enjoying the rewards of it.
Yeah, I'm really interested in terms of the last kind of few games of the season, in terms of what he showcases, because he has just been this kind of such a high level of consistency this season. And, you know, we're very nearing the talks of who should be playing for season and all of this. And he's got to be within a shout for it, just in terms of what he brings to his team. And you say the fact that he does show up when it counts, and a game where we don't have many options going forwards, and he is still one pushing on, driving forward, acting almost like nothing's different. And, you know, yes, it probably wasn't a foul. If we're being honest, whatever brought him down, but the ref gave it, and, you know, they had a soft one towards their goal, so I'm not going to complain too much. And again, good players to turn up in the right positions and show it when counted. And it's felt a bit bizarre to score from a free kick from that kind of angle and trajectory, to be honest, to be able to get him in that amount of space. That was sort of my big takeaway with the goal itself.
I thought it was like a, it was kind of like a striker's finish, really, the way he just come onto it and headed it down. I thought it was a brilliant header. Again, like you say, whether it's a foul or not, ref gave it, we move on. But despite there being somewhat no contact, a lot of those scenarios, he gets his legs tucked from under him. So he was probably kind of expecting that, to be honest, for his legs to be taken. But again, talking back to Sarabia, comes from Sarabia's ball. All like Nori has to do is just get a touch on it to header it. So you talk about experience. I know Aitnori's only 22, but he's been at Wolves for how long now? So he's kind of learned how to understand the club, I'd say. And he's been, for how long he's been here, he's becoming experienced himself.
It's just nice to see that kind of additions to his game now. Nobody particularly thinks of him as good in the air, but you know, he's planted that really nicely in the corner. I always think, you know, it's an ominous sign when a player of his kind of potential starts adding goals to their game, because that's when the vultures start circling a little bit.
Yeah.
and you just know that it's going to come crunch time. I keep talking about it. I think we'll obviously end up getting onto kind of squad depth, transfer business, all that kind of shit. But I think he's going to be the cash cow in the.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive. And as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them. But when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I agree. as Gully freezes. But no, you're right. He is going to be the one who... I'd be curious to see if we I know there's sort of a buyout. Is it for his former club get?
I think we've already taken the option out to remove I believe we've already taken the option to remove the clause from the deal. So whatever we get now is pure our own.
Pure profit, maybe.
So. Yeah, not that I want to see him go.
No, I mean, I think Matt Hobbs has come out and said, hasn't he, that we're going to have to sell somebody. And it's almost going to be whether you sell Aitnori, Gomez, Neto, three biggies.
I think the worrying thing is, because we signed him for, was it about 10 million? Am I right in saying it was about 10 million? Signing for something like that. So you're going to want, you know, at least, I mean, he's not injury prone and he's literally outstanding. Like, he would fit into any of the top six teams. So realistically, in this market, you'd look between 60 and 80, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then you look at, you've signed him for 10 million. If a bid comes in for about 70 million, I think Fosun are going to look at that and snap their hand off for it, to be honest, from a business point of view. That is
100%. I think I'd take 70, 100%. For what is essentially a left back, you'd take 70 million all day long, right?
but you put him in the same bracket as Mark Cucurella. He's probably he's a better fullback than Cucurella, and he went for like what 60 million to Chelsea.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly. He's a better player than Cucurella.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like it's going to be let's enjoy him while we can do. If we could keep him another summer and we were able to potentially offload someone else and keep that going, fantastic. Back to the game itself, as mentioned, it had its peaks and its troughs. It was a game full of a lot of little half chances, is the best way of describing it. And I think you only kind of have to look at the stats from the game. Because very much shows it. I mean, the XG was literally 1-1. And they had 13 shots, we had 8. It wasn't a clear-cut game with lots of huge chances, but as I sort of said, I think Burnley arguably created more chances and looked more of a threat in certain parts of the second half, which is understandable given our formation and players available. But I did think those players like Sarr and Toto Gomez, as you said, Gully, did really sort of stand up to it and did make sure it didn't feel too much like an onslaught. And it never felt that the game was completely away from Wolves. But I think some of those defensive players did just keep it at arm's length, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I was a little bit disappointed with how easily we seem to get played through at times, especially through the middle of the park, knowing how kind of combative we are in there normally with Lamina and Gomez. But yeah, I think we defended our box pretty well. Look, whilst they're a tidy team to play, they're limited, right? The only player that really concerned me, I think, was Wilson Odobea. I thought he looked really good. He's 19, I think. He looks a serious talent. But other than that, I wasn't particularly enamoured with any of Burnley's other players. So whilst I'm pleased we stood up to it, you know, I expected us to make sure we didn't concede any further. And again, you know, I think Lamina's hit the post, you know, almost, you know, come to the rescue again with an out-of-nowhere goal. So... yeah, it was a bit of an odd second half, to be honest. The other thing that really annoyed me was how often we were getting caught offside. Just lazily as well, it seemed. Really lazily.
Go on.
So the three biggest chances of the night fell to people you wouldn't want him to fall to. So the Lamina one where he hit the post. Gomez had that header where he should have scored, or at least he should have put it on target. And the Aitnuri one-on-one, where he hit the midriff, and it's those moments and key moments that just fall into the wrong players. It's just where we are in the squad, and it's like having to play players in certain positions, and Lamina having to play further forward, play box to box, and get into those positions. That, you know, it's just circumstance, and it's frustrating. Because you put Cunha on the end of one of them, or you put Pedro Neto on the end of one of them, or Huang, and you know, we win that game comfortably. I think, like you said last night, you were talking about it, that if we take the lead in that game, we win, because we can see the game out, because we are defensively very strong, and we're built well from the back. And it's just frustrating that injuries have meant that it's compounded up front, that we're having to put players like fullbacks, like central midfielders, like defensive midfielders into attacking positions, and they're the ones having the key chances in the game. And it's nothing that the management team or the coaching team could to do to stop it, really.
Yeah. And as I sort of alluded to, it did sort of feel like it got to a point where Burnley, obviously they need points more than Wolves do in terms of trying to survive and stay up. And I didn't ever think they had quite enough to get 3 points. But they were pushing and on the ascendancy. And I think it got to a certain point in the game where I think they knew if they're not too careful, if they go gung-ho, the Wolves do always have like muscle memory to actually nick something here if they really put their mind to it. And yeah, completely right, Jaffo. This game was very similar to the first game when we played him earlier in the season. The difference was we had a couple more of those attacking players who could just make the difference. I think, was it Hwang who scored? Yeah, and again, it was just that from memory, you know, the goal was, again, it was just a tidy, astute finish from a slightly higher level player, which we just didn't necessarily have yesterday because he was injured, which I guess sort of moves us quite nicely on to the post-match. And you listen to the audio, it tone comes across slightly differently, but O'Neill said in the post-match press conference, we had a Premier League number 9 ready to come in, but we couldn't pay the small amount of money. I was clear with the club of the fear of a player overload. Now it's caught up with us, unfortunately. And also Lamina on Instagram after a game, you know, did a thank you for your support. Let's focus on the next game. Tiny squad with the biggest character. And I think people are kind of latching onto that as, you know, the players, even the players know we got no bloody players. This is now the fourth manager in a row who has kind of complained about the size of the squad. And I appreciate, you know, any manager and head coach is always going to probably complain about the size of their squad, right?
It's the third manager out of the four that have been a victim of their own success.
Yeah.
Because Nuno, when he wanted players, they were performing the level that they should have been. Bruno Lage, we pushing for Champions League football. And now, where Gary O'Neill is this season, exactly the same. But they're performing at a way higher level than we expected. So it's almost like the club are saying, okay, well, you've exceeded expectations, so we don't need to invest. You're at a position where you're strong. And it's sort of looking at it, thinking, do we need to put money in? Is there a reward for putting this risk, you know, towards the club? And they're weighing it up and going, not really. So you don't need it. And they just try and balance the books. I mean, that's heavily simplifying the situation, but it's risk and reward at the end of the day, because they are a business, you know, they're a business person, and they're in it for profit and making money and sustainability. So I totally understand. But as a football fan, when you see teams like Forest, what they're doing, I know that's absolutely bonkers what they're doing and the way that they're doing finance. But you've got teams like that, teams like Everton, even teams like Newcastle, and what, you know, spending the money that they've spent. And that we're sitting here and we kind of look like we're not investing. Even though they have put money in, it just doesn't look like it.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's there's this kind of perfect storm that's coincided, which has led us to this position. When you look back, you know, you can't accuse the owners of not investing, aside from pulling, you know, extra cash out their own pocket. In terms of backing the managers, money has been spent. It's just been spent badly. And that's what we're suffering from right now. If Gonçalo Guedes was anything like the player we were hoping he was going to be, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now, I don't think. If Mateus Nunes, you know, fair enough, all right, we made some money on him. But if he delivered on his performances, you know, would we have been higher up the table? Would there have been a multitude of other things that went right off the back of that as well, you know, rather than having to delve into January and you know, spend almost £80 million worth when you factor in the Cunha money last January. You know, would that have all happened if we'd had a few more points on the board going into January transfer window, all that sort of stuff? Yeah, it's everything that we're judging this on is hindsight right now. And that's the kind of thing where I just think, you can only deal with the information that you have to hand. No one could have legislated for all four of our attackers, including Jean-Marie Bellegarde, if you want to throw him in there, getting injured. Like, nobody could have planned for that. Nobody could have planned for Jurgen Klinsmann, you know, doing whatever he'd done to half the Korean squad by the looks of it, you know, at the Asia Cup. You know, Hwang just seemingly getting flogged to death, coming back with like half a leg to run on. When he played in that Brighton game, he just looked like an absolute shadow of his former self. It's all well and good making all these comments now and saying, told you so, but you know, nobody can say that this was likely to happen. The chances to happen are actually quite slim when it comes down to it. They are.
I get the you know, all three of your forward players pulling up with the same hamstring injury is unlikely.
Yeah,
but I kind of go off like the continual improvement though, and the fact that the club were very willing to offboard Sasa Kladnic and Fabio Silva in January, that is a bigger red flag, because you always need that insurance policy. And I mean, yeah, we've kind of touched on it a few times over pods, and partly I do think Gary O'Neill has to take some level of accountability.
100% he does.
Because ultimately it's his job to keep some of those players happy. And
take the players out of it, right? You've got an £18 million striker and a £35 million striker that you've decided you wanted to, you know, shift to the side, didn't see them having an impact on the football pitch. And therefore, whether you believe what you hear or not, they might start kicking up a fuss around the training ground. We know this happens, you know, it's the way of the world in terms of players wanting to engineer moves and that kind of thing. So we find ourselves in a situation where the club's, again, having to move players on, which is a laborious process, as we've seen. You know, it's not like, to be fair, you know, Fabio and Kladzic, they had suitors and whatnot, but it still creates a scenario in which the club has to do wheeling and dealing, when in reality, it could just be a few more minutes here and there, you know, an arm around the shoulder, a few conversations leading up to, you know, saying, you know what, this is what I need from this player. Obviously, Gary O'Neill has done a brilliant job, and I'm sure that his man management of the majority of the squad is of a sufficient standard that has got them to play in the way they are playing for him. But at the same time, if you've got a small squad, you've got to look after everyone. And we had a small squad, and you just didn't look after a couple of players who would have been so helpful to us right now.
I mean, ultimately, there's only 11 happy football players in a squad. Yeah. And there is a level of that, and part of it, and you know, it's not Gary O'Neill's fault that he's the third manager in 12 months, and even beyond that, that this is a squad that is just a mixed match of different managers who have different ideas. And you know, Jorge Mendes has dipped his, you know, chubby little fingers in the club and stuff like that. You say it is a perfect storm, and it all comes to a head. And my analogy for it is, if you kind of you go to a supermarket and there's like cashier, there's not enough cashiers there, and you can see they're working the socks off, but the queues are there, the staff look knackered, and it would just be easier if there was just, you know, hey, look, if there was just one extra person here, makes everyone's life easier.
Yeah, but actually, do Tesco really want to employ an extra person?
No, exactly, they don't. but they realised at the end of it, yeah, everyone moans, everyone grumbles, but they've still got the staff working there, and they've still got the money. And actually, why would we change it? why would you change it?
Imagine the cashier getting a repetitive strain injury or something from, you know, passing on too many goods high a speed. Yeah,
exactly. I understand those peaks and troughs. It's very Mike Ashley in his management, but he wouldn't invest in Newcastle as much when they're in Premier League, because they were there and they were they got revenue from TV. He invested much more when they're in the Championship, because actually he doesn't want them to be in the Championship. He wanted them to be in the Premier League. Once they're there, it dropped off, and it sort of has that for Wolves that, oh shit, we're getting in trouble, we need to invest, and kind of go up and down, which, I don't know, I'm curious to see if all of the new financial regulations, restrictions is going to impact it. And you've sort of just got to have faith in Matt Hobbs, frankly, to have a strategic plan in place. And it's incredibly difficult to have that in football, because it's not like, you know, you could say, oh well, we're just gonna, you know, buy £5-10 million players, and, you know, we'll convert them into £50 million transfers in 2 years' time. Like, you talk about the odds of four players, you know, pulling up with hammies, the odds of, you know, making five successful signings in a summer is just as unlikely, unfortunately.
The thing is, with a model like that, though, you only need one out of five, and the risk is so less. And you look at what Wolves are doing now, and they are starting to push towards that model. Since Matt Hobbs has been there, we haven't thrown big money apart from Matheus Cunha, but that was we're getting our fingers burnt for the amount of money. We paid way too much money for what he was worth because we were desperate at that time. But I think, as Gully said, we have invested money, but it's always been invested at the wrong time, and it's gone into the wrong players. And it's easy to see, as you say, easy to see with hindsight that we've gone into the wrong players. But it's not really, because Gonçalo Guedes has never pulled trees up wherever he's been. Matheus Nunes, fantastic footballer. He's the one who should have succeeded. Fabio Silva, he'd barely played minutes. We overpaid for him. Sasha Kalajic, major injury history. We paid £18 million for somebody who, you know, who'd had some serious knee injuries. You got to think, okay, when we've thrown money at players, have we really done due diligence on actually the transfers that we're bringing in? And now that we've got somebody in the club like Matt Hobbs, I think there's a lot more faith and there's a lot more understanding that actually the players that we're going to bring in, they're going to have looked at properly, they're going to scout it properly and understand the actual true value and what they bring to the squad. Because, you know, what they've done in the past, they've thrown money at players who have done either done well for 6 months or a season. You know, in the comments there, Patrick Strani, fantastic for 6 months at AC Milan. He was fantastic. He was unplayable when he first broke into that side. But it was untenable. Now he's scoring goals in like Serie C. Yeah, Serie C, Serie D.
I think that's the key bit for me now, is that Hobbs has to be trusted, and whether we like it or not, the model's changed. You know, those Mendes signings that we've bemoaned, let's be honest, they might have been expensive, they might have been flashy, they might have been the right kind of players on paper. We've been stung, we've been burnt. You know, once the Jotters and the Neveses and all that kind of dried up, the rest of it, not much to write home about. So we've got to give Matt Hobbs, I would say, three transfer windows to kind of then make a judgment call and say, okay, this is where we've landed now. This is what the approach is. Yeah, Brighton sold, I think, £100+ million worth of midfielder in McAllister and Caicedo this summer. They've reinvested it. I'd say they've had a bit of a down season this year, to be honest. So that's going to be the key. That's going to be the real where Hobbs earns his money and earns his status as a really smart operator. So the positive way of looking at it is that, you know, we seem to have quite a smart guy at the top of the football operation, and he deserves the opportunity to really stamp his authority on it.
Yeah. Say, in other news, Daniel Podence scored his 13th goal of the season for Olympiacos yesterday.
Get him back!
Fuck you, pub league!
No, I look, you can't. It is. We moan, we vent, we get frustrated. It is borderline impossible to get it right consistently without having that magic wand sometimes. Let's have a look at the table. Brighton have drawn. So they are now on 43 points, of course. I mean, it very much kind of feels like that pushing into 8th place, 7th place is becoming that little bit harder at the moment. I mean, realistically, guys, we've got 8 games to go, 24 points to play for. Do you think we're going to be able to push into top 7, or is that a bit of a wish right now?
I think I said probably about 2 months ago that the only way that happens is if we keep players fit, and we failed on that one. And that's not through our own fault. We just haven't kept the players fit. You know, we've been unlucky with injuries. And I think you look at the teams around us, they're starting to get players back, starting to get players fresher, and they're starting to get results, you know. West Ham are starting to play a little bit better. Newcastle are getting a little bit more consistent in the way that they're playing. It's a tough ask. But, you know, hindsight again, let's bring it back to hindsight. A top 10 finish where we were last season, at the back end of last season, and where we started this season, I think everyone here would have bitten your hand off for a top 10 finish. So I think we need to understand with how far we've come with the management and the team to get to this position. And I think we should be quite happy. If we finish top 10, I don't think we should be disappointed at all.
I think our saving grace is that, you know, the teams around us don't look like putting the run together at the moment either. West Ham, I don't particularly rate in any way, shape, or form. Stu will enjoy me saying that, I'm sure. But they're the kind of team that get dug out of holes by players like Bowen and players like Kudus. I expect us to get at least a point at the weekend because I think we're a better coach team. And if Cunha's capable of doing more minutes, then, you know, I really do fancy us. So if teams like that can't put a run together, then we've still every chance of finishing in seventh. And let's be honest, you know, Brighton are picking up draws against Brentford tonight, you know, Newcastle drawing against Everton last night. Chelsea's probably the one team who are still in the mix that could put a run together because they've got a couple of games in hand. But nobody's exactly, you know, snapping at the chance of taking that last couple of European spaces. So still in with a shout. I'm not saying we're going to be, you know, charging towards it. But if Hwang comes back in good shape as well, we've still got some games that are absolutely winnable. You know, Forest away, Bournemouth at home, Luton at home. You know, if you're picking up, you know, 9 points from those kind of three fixtures, and anything that beyond that with some of the fixtures we got are a bit of a bonus. But if we get anything like 54, 55 points, I think we're in with a shout.
I think we'll finish around eighth, I do. Like you just said, Gully, we've got a lot of games that are still winnable. No one around us, as we've said, is really doing much. And I think we've got the advantage with players coming back too. Plus, I think going into the back end of the season now, you know, you might pop up Chiwome, could get in a good position and score and go on a run. You never know. Obviously, that all comes from experience and playing the games that they are now with all the younger players. So I think we'll finish around eighth, I'll say.
I was going to say, I think time will tell. I think the fact that we've got a tough run in might slightly negate things. But you're right, we've shown that with a full-strength team, we can really push them on. Who knows? You know, it's got in comments. You know, if we can beat West Ham heading towards Bournemouth, Luton home games and Hwang being back, York might still be in reach. I think we're probably going to finish ninth, personally. I think it'll just run away in terms of those last couple of games. But you know what? I know we're not quite there. I'd really love us to piss on some bonfires at the end of the season with that title running, though. Like, if nothing else, just let's just spoil some chips, you know?
Well, the fans are the best in terms of making sure they ruin a party. So, yeah, absolutely on board with that. And I don't think any of the top three are particularly imperious compared to the way they have been in recent seasons. I think the hardest one actually out of the lot will probably be Arsenal. They're really good off the ball, which I think makes them a more difficult proposition in terms of trying to get ahead in the game and get something to hold on to. But who knows, they might decide to start Aaron Ramsdale or something like that against us, and that'd help.
Honestly, if we could get something against them with Aaron Ramsdale in goal, glorious.
Glorious. And it's at Molineux at the end of the day. You know, anything could happen at the Mall. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that seems a good place to wrap up today's show. Big thanks to everyone who's listened. Make sure you check out the offers over at Kitbag as well. Some great opportunities to get some fantastic Wolves merch. The links in the description. Make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves at Wolves Fancast here, there, and everywhere across social media. Make sure you keep up to date with Tom's blogs, Gully's tactical analysis, and of course any of our shows, whether it's our preview shows, Gully shows, or the reaction shows as well. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Jiffo.
See you around.
It's goodbye from Tom.
See you later. Thanks for joining.
And it's goodbye from Gully.
Good night, everybody.
See you next time, everyone.